Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Source Words episode where we're going to talk some opinion, not necessarily fact. But I have a couple of guys joining me. I'm going to let them introduce themselves in a minute here. But we wanted to come on and talk about the big news that dropped yesterday about Dan Didio no longer being at DC Comics. And we were just saying that it's going to be an interesting year. I think there's going to be a lot of ramifications. It does have me a little worried, to be honest, but we'll get into all that. We don't have a lot of details, and some of the things we do know are they're not necessarily backed up by fact. The truth is that when executives leave like this, oftentimes we never know what really happened behind the scenes. I mean, you can look at something as recently as Geoff Johns stepping down as chief creative officer at DC June, I think it was, of 2018. And, that was a phrase used, step down. People speculated, was he pushed out? Did he leave on his own accord? Did he want to focus on movies? And we never got any details. So that's just the way of the corporate world sometimes. And as much as we're fans and we want to be on the inside and the know, it's just not the case most of the time. And I have a feeling that that'll be the same situation with Didio leaving. We're just not privy to that information, and a lot of it's going to be speculation, and some of it will be maybe borne out by changes we see. If we see a lot of things that Didio championed being rolled back, then we can make assumptions about that as well. But the fact of the matter is, it's never black and white when it comes to these kind of corporate jobs, now that the big publishers like Marvel and DC are owned by these giant multi-billion-dollar corporations. I don't think you can ever put too much blame on one person, because it's not one person making the decisions. So especially as Warner Brothers took more and more control, and certainly now that AT&T owns them, as pop culture and IP, intellectual property, has changed with what's happened over with Disney and Marvel, their movies making billions of dollars, Warner Brothers realizing, hey, there's more potential here than we realized. That brings in more oversight to the comic books, and all of a sudden, it's not one person making a decision anymore. So much like a head coach in football or a baseball manager, Didio probably got too much credit for things that went right, and too much blame for things that went wrong. And I think you could just look to the reaction on social media from fans and creators alike to realize sort of what a controversial tenure Didio had. Some people are, particularly on the fandom side, are rejoicing that he's no longer there, which I kind of find to be in poor taste. But I understand if you feel that it was time for him to go and time for a change. I totally get that. That's a valid opinion. But I think rejoicing that somebody lost their job, especially someone who loves comics as much as Didio, is in poor taste. On the creator side, it skews more toward the other direction. I've seen a lot of creators on social media talking about how much respect they have for Dan and how grateful they are that he kind of championed their cause in a lot of situations. So that's just kind of my initial thoughts on it. We'll get more into depth, but I wanted to give my guests a chance to introduce themselves, let us know where you can be found, kind of what you do, where your comic expertise is, and then your initial thoughts on Didio leaving. We'll start with you, Dark Knight.
Well, first of all, Jace, thank you for inviting me on. It's a cool opportunity to sit down and chat with you and of course, Comic Boom. But my name is Trevor. I run a YouTube channel called Dark Knight Nation, where I really like to base a lot of my content on discussion with my peers. But a lot of my solo videos tend to take a very analytical angle to comic books that are coming out. It's almost like me attempting to verbalize an editorial critique, that an editor would prepare for the writer. And it's really trying to, expand my ability to elaborate on my thoughts on comic books as somebody who has kind of found a passion and a drive to work my way into the industry, but also to bring to light all of the really, really intricate techniques that creators, both writers and artists, are using to make books and to successfully do things in comic books that we enjoy. My platform is YouTube. It is Dark Knight Nation. I also, you know, have a Twitter that I use to discuss things on and off with. Obviously, when news breaks, it doesn't always warrant a video. So that's a big part. And that's really my whole shtick.
And what are your initial thoughts? Like, what was your reaction when you heard Didio left? I think I heard you on your channel yesterday, the live YouTube feed you did, saying that you kind of got started with the New 52. So you must feel, you know, in some way grateful to Dan for being a part of that, right?
Well, I think that the rough thing is, and you brought it up excellently earlier, where when you had mentioned how with these big corporate entities, and especially with the lack of transparency, we don't really know exactly who's contributed in what way. We have speculation, we have the rumor mill, of course, but it's really hard for us to know for a fact what exactly, especially somebody with a higher, more executive power in a publisher, what exactly they're championing and what ideas they're trying to shut down. So I was very neutral because obviously you hear a lot of rumors, but rumors can in fact be just that. Ultimately, based on some of the reactions I'm seeing from creators, I'm starting to feel a little bit more comfortable with Dan Didio's trajectory out of DC. However, I think that whatever happens next is going to totally redefine how I feel about it, because as much as Dan Didio is a point of controversy in his role in comics, he's also kind of been there at DC for some really, really great times. I mean, that kind of point in the mid-2000s when we got, you know, Geoff Johns' Green Lantern rolling and we had Grant Morrison's Batman run and Batman and Robin rolling. I mean, he was editor-in-chief at that point. So there has to be something said about the amount of quality that has also come out under Dan Didio. But obviously being a publisher is a slightly different role from editor-in-chief. So, yes, I kind of dove into reading comic books on time with the periodical when the New 52 came out. But, you know, I kind of dipped myself into a lot of pre-Flashpoint stuff. But really, with the New 52, obviously sales-wise it worked. And I think that if approached a little bit more intelligently and a little bit more thoughtfully, it could have not been such a point of dissatisfaction for older fans. You know, I know I've talked to Comic Boom a lot in the past, and in his experience kind of being a veteran reader of comic books when the New 52 came out. And for me, you know, I'm kind of reabsorbing older fans' thoughts post-mortem. You know, to me, like New 52 Batman, I started reading the actual issues. Like, I caught up around issue 25 or so. So, you know, that was pretty normal for me. But overall, you know, I'm taking a very neutral stance on Dan Didio leaving DC, just because I don't think we have quite enough information, but I know you'd mentioned that, you know, you might have a little bit more on deck for us to discuss. So I'm excited to kind of get that ball rolling and see what you guys think as well.
All right, fair enough. What about you, Comic Boom?
Well, just a little bit of background on me. I'm a lifer when it comes to comic books. Dark Knight repeatedly criticizes me for reading comics I don't like too much. It's because I'm addicted. So it's a cross that I bear. But I've been collecting. I'm just a lifelong collector. I've been collecting since I was seven years old, and I'm over 50 now. So you know, I have the I try to maintain a little bit of humility, but I'm getting old and cranky in my old age and more opinionated. And, you know, I really do feel, and I admit my bias, but my biases, you don't need to radically change an approach when it comes to comic book publication that has worked for decades. And I think what's happened here is that, and maybe it's cultural, but so many people, and maybe it's the generation or it's just the mindset, but it's everybody wants to change something and everybody wants to do something different and everybody wants to rock the boat and everybody wants to be heard. And we're in the midst of these culturally divisive times, and with comic books and with the release, you know, look at, you know, Dan Didio was, he was the editor in chief for probably 10 years. And then I guess co-publisher for 10, since 2010, cope with Jim Lee. He's left an indelible mark on DC Comics, but at the same time, he's left a divisive mark. And I think it's quite clear that, there have been many rumors over the last 18 years about Dan Didio being fired. I mean, it almost became an inside joke at one point. So now to suddenly see that it's finally happened, I mean, I'm still pinching myself, is it real? Is it real? I feel like I'm Dorothy. Like I click my heels and I'll suddenly disappear. I think it needed to be done. I think it's a changing of the guard. I think it needed to be done. I'm going to be, I respect Dark Knight greatly. He knows that. I'm going to be a little bit more aggressive than Dark Knight on this. I do think we can say some things with confidence. I know a lot of it's rumor and what have you, but Didio, there's too much baggage with him. The new 52, he was the one who didn't want to keep, he wanted to keep the Batman family unhappy. He didn't believe in happy relationships. He's responsible for the breakup for the non-wedding of Batwoman and Maggie Sawyer, keeping the DC universe dark, keeping them generally unhappy. If you read the DC New 52 failed, I think, for that reason. Look at the solicitations for DC Rebirth about a direct quote from Geoff Johns. You know, what changed at DC and what Didio represented was a fundamental different shift and approach to the characters that focused on hardship, antagonism, challenging always pushing the matter forward, always challenging the status quo. Rebirth is about embracing hope and optimism and highlighting and embracing the greatness of character and that it's that general approach that I think the release of Dan Didio, letting him go, firing him, I think that might be a statement. Now, the counterpoint to that quick, and then I'll let you take it. Obviously, I'll be quiet. The counterpoint is, of course, I'm a little bit worried with, it looks like Snyder's won the war of ideas at DEC. I think it's clear that, the future of 5G might be in doubt. But I've got some serious concerns if we're going to start embracing Snyder's darkness.
Yeah, it's a good point to make. So let me give everybody some background. I know everybody that listens to the podcast doesn't necessarily have the same level of commitment that we three do and understand kind of the background. So let me just give you sort of the brief overview history here of Didio at DC and kind of my thoughts on his progression there. So he was hired in 2002 as vice president of editorial. So, you're talking about not just logistics, but also in terms of having input on story, right? Helping creators understand what the overall direction was going to be at that time, coming out of the crash of the 90s, DC's sales numbers weren't great. But as Dark Knight said, in the mid 2000s is sort of when it was sort of a rebirth of a golden age for DC with some really great stuff. I'm not a fan of it, but the Morrison Batman run was incredible, and I think Geoff Johns put a mark on Green Lantern that nobody had done before or since. So as those ideas that Didio was helping to usher in seemed to be clicking, he was promoted to vice president, executive editor, which executive editor is just another term for editor in chief. So that happened in 2004. And again, we saw a lot of success at that time. But as often happens in the comic book industry, you can't rest on your laurels. And this probably has a lot to do with Dan's personality in terms of what type of storyteller he is. And so DC's answer to those flagging sales was, we're hearing from a lot of fans, a lot of readers that it's too much, right? 70 years of DC history, it's so hard. It's a huge barrier to entry for new fans.
Where do you start when, you know, Action Comics is on issue 700 or 800? Where do you start when, you know, Batman's in the 600s? So the idea of this new 52 was born. And the thought was, we're going to start over with number ones. We're going to throw out a lot of the history that that is convoluted and doesn't make a lot of sense and is preventing new readers from picking up the titles. Now, I have mixed feelings about that. It's 100% great for any comic publisher to try to do whatever they can to get new readers into comics, because we don't have enough. There's far too few of us that are being asked to bear more and more of the financial burden to keep this industry afloat. So anything you can do to bring in new readers, I'm 100% for that. The mistake they made, and Dan Didio himself and Jim Lee have come out and said it was a mistake, was that they in doing that got rid of a lot of what I would call the charm of the DC universe, and that was the relationships, the connection, the legacy characters that people had fallen in love with, you know, Wally West, Kyle Rayner, you know, that sort of thing. And so that's where the new 52 failed, along with another point of failure that seemed to be endemic of Didio's tenure at DC, unfortunately. I'll talk about that in a second. So 2010, Dan Didio, along with Jim Lee, is promoted to co-publisher. That was following the retirement of the longtime publisher at DC, Paul Levitz. Now, what's interesting is when you talk about publisher as a title, over at Marvel, the publisher's in the background, deals with licenses, deals with logistics of publishing the books. It's not really a public face of the company. That falls more to their editor-in-chief, who's currently C.B. Cebulski. Prior to that, it was Axel Alonso. Prior to that, Joe Quesada. You know, Stan Lee, everyone knows the name, really the public face of comics. At DC, it was never that out there, never that much in your face. The sort of level of communication wasn't there until Dan Didio became editor-in-chief or executive editor, because he, in a way, he was kind of more like one of us, more of a fan. The guy loves comics, and I don't think anybody can argue that. So that was sort of the first time that DC had a editor-in-chief, if you will, that was really the face of comics. And even though he moved over to publisher, which along with Jim Lee, which is, again, more of a logistics position, dealing with licenses and more, you know, high-level executive decisions to sort of promote their properties and characters and dealing with licensing and that sort of thing, he always still had one foot in that executive editor role. Because he did have so much input and so much ideas, and even though he's promoted to publisher, I don't think there was any part of him that wanted to relinquish that role, because he sees himself as a storyteller as well. So Bob Harris stepped in to that executive editor, editor-in-chief role. Actually, they gave him that title, even though, again, they're very synonymous. And he was dealing with sort of the logistics of, you know, what creators are and what books, are we getting the books to the printers on time, and that sort of thing. And I don't think that Harris had much input, at least not publicly, into the creative direction of DC. But meanwhile, you had Didio and Lee that kind of brainstormed and came up with this idea of this new 52, because I don't think if Paul Levitz stays in his role as publisher, the new 52 happens. I think that was a lot of Didio and Lee, again, trying to bring in new readers. And you know, it failed because they just didn't keep the momentum going, and they made some poor choices. And that's where Didio has been as this co-publisher, but still having a big role in the creative direction of DC. And he's been doing that since 2010. And I think that failure to capitalize on momentum is the big failure for Dan Didio as an executive at DC. I know Dan personally. He's a great guy. Like I said, he loves comics. He loves comic fans, and he's, you know, he's a geek like one of us that loves all these things that are at the center of pop culture now. And I defy anybody to argue that he wasn't doing what he thought was best for DC with these decisions. That doesn't mean I agree with all his decisions. I think that, like Comic Boom said, some of the choices he made, not wanting them to get married, wanting to keep things sort of dark and gritty, if you will. Those weren't necessarily the best choices for DC. I get it. You can't have everything be sunshine and rainbows either. You've got to have a mix. But whenever they did manage to do something that had a lot of success, they, for whatever reason, could never maintain that momentum. First two or three issues of New 52 sold like gangbusters. They weren't able to maintain that momentum. You know, things that did well, like the 52 weekly series, you know, they tried to repeat that success with Countdown, failed horribly. You look at something as recently as Rebirth. That got a lot of people excited. It got a lot of new creative blood into DC. It brought, you know, like the Benson sisters immediately come to mind. Sam Humphrey's doing work at DC. John Semper, who was a big part of the animated Spider-Man series success in the 90s, bringing people back like Liam Sharp to do Wonder Woman. Greg Rucka back in the door at DC. So there was a lot of good there. And with Geoff Johns sort of spearheading that, things worked really, really well. But again, they weren't able to maintain the momentum. And you can point fingers. Maybe it's Dan's fault. Maybe I think a lot of it was Doomsday Clock losing momentum by going every other month. And I don't know the reason for that. Was it Gary Frank? Was it Geoff Johns? Was there some other stuff going on behind the scenes? You know, there's the rumors about how much it affected Tom King's Batman run and how Tom had to stretch things out, which kind of led to all of a sudden people that loved the beginning of his Batman run talking about how it wasn't so great anymore. So for whatever reason, Didio just as a leader wasn't able to keep that momentum going, wasn't able to capitalize. And as much as I love Dan, I have to look at that as the failure of DC over the last 18 years while Dan has been there. I don't think it ever came from necessarily a place of, well, I want to shake things up for the sake of shaking things up. But I think Dan's personality is just such that he's always trying to push things. He's always trying to do something innovative. And I think by doing that, you're not letting things happen organically. And it led to some consternation, I think, on the fact of sort of the other political ideas at DC. Obviously, Geoff Johns, you kind of put him in one camp. You put Scott Snyder in one camp. You put Didio in another camp. They're not always going to agree. And you get, you know, the politics like you have at any corporation, which leads to infighting, which, you know, when you don't have everybody pulling in the same direction on the rope, that's where you start to see some of these cracks. And I think that has a lot to do with why Dan's not there anymore. Whether you want to say, you know, the Snyder camp won or, you know, the Geoff Johns camp won, I don't even know that that's necessarily the case. It may have just come to the point where the higher ups at Warner Brothers, who in turn have to answer to these new AT&T overlords, are saying we can't keep going down the same road and making the same mistakes. It's time for a change. And so in that way, I'm happy that we're going to see a change. Obviously, I'm not happy that Didio lost his livelihood here, lost his job, because he was so passionate about it. But even I have to admit, it was probably time for a change. And I agree with what Dark Knight said earlier. The next year is going to be really telling to see if this was the right choice, the right direction to go or not. Because I have a feeling that Dan was probably the most staunch defender of the creative people at DC. He would not hesitate to stand up if he thought that AT&T was making a poor decision. Will his successor be as staunch in defending creators? I mean, there's just so many questions that we don't know. That time is going to have to answer for us, but it's good. It's good and bad. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I would just, add in there that with Dan Didio, I think a major problem is him putting too much emphasis on probably the creators per se. It's one thing to respect the creators, but what has to come first is understanding DC Comics and having that vision and an atmosphere for DC Comics. And that's what Rebirth was. And if you want to embrace New 52, fine. You want to embrace Rebirth, fine. But pick one. I mean, Marvel, for example, has a very specific type of tonality to their books and to their universe. It's understandable. You know, when you're reading a Marvel comic, it used to be the case that we used to know when we were reading a DC comic, you know, we don't know anymore. Now it's all over the place. And that is because of the failure of Dan Didio. I put that almost squarely on his shoulders because he's always trying his different sensibilities. He's, you know, the New 52 this, and then we'll go back. Then we're going to try Rebirth, and then they don't stick with Rebirth. I mean, are you insane? Like, what are you doing? He's trying to rock the boat. You know, he was so big on Identity Crisis. He wanted to have something real. That was a big thing with Identity Crisis. Yeah, great. Do we talk about Identity Crisis nowadays? No, not really. And they never even finished the storyline anyway. Even going into Infinite Crisis. I remember that. I remember the big cause of Infinite Crisis was supposed to be the breakdown of the Trinity. What happens when Wonder Woman, Batman, and Superman don't get along? It leads to a breakdown in the Trinity. It caused Superman of Earth 2 to break down the sword, to keep hitting the wall of reality, along with Superboy Prime, to try to bring back the hope, and because Earth had become so skeptical. And that was the basis of Infinite Crisis. But guess what happened? It became nothing but a Superboy Prime limb-wrenching fest. And incidentally, when you talk about Greg Rucka, Greg Rucka left DC because of his bout with Dan Didio. Dan Didio had to court him to get him back. That Rucka couldn't finish his Wonder Woman storyline. He couldn't finish the ramifications of Wonder Woman snapping Maxwell Lord's neck. For every success that you can point to that Didio's done, you can virtually point to a corresponding failure. And so, yeah, it looks really good. 18-year resume. You know, you got one success a year in 18 years. You got 9 great successes. Put that on your resume, but put the whole resume out there. And you know what? And I guess maybe I'll be the counterpoint, and Dark Knight will be more optimistic than I am. But, the more I reflect on it, yesterday on our live stream, that Dark Knight and I did, and today and hearing everything, this is a good thing. This is a good thing. To be honest, if DC is going to fail now and it's going to continue to go downhill, at least know we tried it with somebody new, because you know, if you can't solve a problem with the same parts that make up the problem, and Didio's been there for all the problems and caused a good many of them over the last 18 years. Has he been there for some successes? But remember that Dan Didio's primary successes, they've always been the outliers. They've been on the sidelines, and they've always been the successes that have challenged the concept and the atmosphere of Rebirth when they didn't need to. You could have had those, you could have all of Dan Didio's successes, whether it's Wednesday's comics or the Weekly 52, or even Identity Crisis, could have been done in the context and spirit of Rebirth. But it wasn't. Instead, it was always challenging this, pushing the, you know, darkness that. And finally, just a quick comment. DC right now does not have an adequate talent pool. They don't have the talent pool to even embrace a Rebirth. They don't. They need more talent. And I'm pleased to hear, and I'm glad to hear, that they're going to be getting more talent from animation and from the TV writers. And maybe, because at least with TV writers and screenplay writers, you know that they know how to write stories with endings. And we're not going to get 36 long or 39 issue story arcs that ultimately go nowhere. With you know, we get to the end of it, and then every year or two, we've got to have another crisis. Anyways, my rant is complete.
Let's make a couple comments about what you said there, Boone. I agree with you, but again, I take it all with a grain of salt, because I don't. Again, you can put a lot of you can point a finger at Didio for a lot of the failures, and I think that he would stand up and wear that, but I think you can't all put it on Didio, just like you can't give him credit for all the successes. But I do agree with you that the and it goes back to what I was saying, the big failure of Didio's time at DC is the lack of consistency. You know, that constantly trying for whatever reason to push the envelope, let's try something new. Well, we tried this, it worked for a while, then it stopped working, so now we got to try something new. You can kind of compare it to Marvel's recent failures with constantly rebooting and starting over with number ones. You know, eventually that well goes dry if people lose their excitement. You know, the same thing with DC. You can't keep, you know, rebooting, relaunching, whatever word you want to give it. You know, you call it a crisis, it's a soft reboot, it's a hard reboot, whatever. It doesn't matter. You got to just at some point stop going to that old tired horse, you know, stop beating that dead horse. So I agree with you that it was time for a change, and hopefully we will see some change. And as far as new talent, I agree with you there as well. The only thing I worry about is, I'm not blaming Dan. I'm just saying that because of his personality, you know, he's a big bombastic guy, larger than life presence. And for that reason, because, you know, he's been accused of being a micromanager, I think a lot of it is just his love of comics and his interest and wanting to be involved. I don't think the editorial staff at DC now is strong enough. I think you need to start there, because if you bring in these other creators from other fields who understand how to tell story in those fields, it doesn't always translate to good comic stories. You need a strong editorial staff, not to interfere with the creative ideas, but just to guide them until they kind of have an idea of the way the comic industry works, sort of the ebb and flow of it. So I do worry about that. You know, you look at, you know, really strong editors like Eddie Berganza, who obviously is not at DC anymore for legitimate reasons. He should not be there. He made his bed, and it finally caught up with him. But when you talk about, you know, guys like that, Mark Doyle, Jamie S. Rich, they do have some good editors, but not enough. You know, people point to Didio as part of the problem there as well, because he was so hands-on, it kept them from attracting good editors. And, you know, Didio, some people point the finger saying he let Berganza stay too long despite Eddie's transgressions. So, I mean, there are a lot of reasons. Again, it's a lot of moving parts. It's a corporate world, and I don't think you can put all the blame on Dan, but he's got to definitely shoulder his share of it. So it'll be interesting to see. They definitely do need an influx of talent, but I would say the entire industry could use an influx of talent. I'm not super impressed with Marvel's level of talent these days either. And a lot of it might just go to the changing of the industry. Creators would rather do creator-owned stuff. You look at, you know, Kirkman's success with The Walking Dead and how it's made him, a multimillionaire. People want to own their own stuff. They want to own their own creations because it leads to a bigger piece of the pie. So there's a lot of problems in the industry. We're not going to solve them all today. But hopefully, you know, we clearly love DC. We want to see them succeed. So I guess we'll see what the future holds. What do you have to add, Dark Knight?
Well, I think that, you know, we bring up a couple interesting topics of conversation there. Obviously, Didio does have a large presence in DC, both publicly and behind the scenes. So, you know, there's certainly a lot of blame for him to shoulder. But the industry is such a non-transparent machine. You know, the public, in terms of the fans generally, and it's not entirely their faults, don't know exactly who is responsible for what. And even between both of the big two and then, you know, amongst independent publishers, some of those roles within that machine might have the same name, but might also have different responsibilities. You brought up kind of the dichotomy of an editor-in-chief between Marvel and DC versus kind of that almost editor-in-chief type of role that Dan DiDio played at DC versus the EIC role that Cebulski plays at Marvel. So I think that there, you know, Boom does bring up a lot of great points, and I think he is well-founded in making those points. You know, DiDio doesn't have an acumen to follow through. Looking at Rebirth, it was a huge success, and it was truncated, you know, within 2 years after launch, which is a huge disappointment. I mean, obviously, you know, there's no way that level of quality when it started and that level of kind of wide praise was going to be maintained absolutely. But I think that the issue again, and Boom brought up a good point, is an unwillingness to
kind of work things out. He felt it was time to change. And the big issue with the big two publishers right now in general is a level of satisfaction with temporary boosts in sales. They're not looking to build long-term audiences or the long-term sales through a little bit more, you know, of a slow regimen, which is an issue. That's going to cause a huge issue in the industry. And perhaps that was one of the reasons why whoever intervened to let go of Dan DiDio. Maybe they are going to make that change. But I'm not willing to necessarily say that I'm excited for DiDio to leave, strictly because I am a little bit, perhaps paranoid, definitely afraid that whoever comes in is going to be an AT&T corporate choice that doesn't know the industry, that doesn't love the industry. And perhaps the move to bring in writers from animation and television and whatnot are to kind of corporatize comics in a way we haven't seen before. Now, I'm not saying it's 100% going to be a bad thing. Some of the best writers in comics came from other mediums. You look at JMS. Had huge runs, Superman Earth 1. His Spider-Man run was massive. His Thor run was massive, you know. But there is a massive learning curve. And I think something we brought up, which I'm glad you mentioned, Jace, was the lack of editorial strength at DC, because we do need somebody to be able to chaperone that level of creativity into the medium, because there is nothing like comics. Comics maintains this wonderful breeding ground for opportunity for creators to really work outside of what we would think storytelling can be, both because it is a visual narrative style of storytelling, but also because there is a lot of nuance that can be included in the writing. You know, I recently switched my degree over to, you know, an English-based, literature-based field. And I don't think I've ever read anything more deliberate than Watchmen. And mind you, I'm being thrown through all of the classics, all of the things that everybody and their mom tells you to read. But comic books have a particular space and a particular ability to do things that no other medium can. And so it does worry me that these people are going to come in from other mediums and not maybe A, appreciate, or B, recognize what they can do. I mean, you look at even success stories, right? When Kevin Smith first hopped onto Daredevil, he made a huge mistake in the beginning. He flooded the entirety of the page with, you know, internal monologue and dialogue boxes. It totally slows down the story, and it totally kind of deprives the reader of experiencing the artwork, right? Because not only are those main figures moving an important kind of quality to it, the backgrounds, all of the intricate things that, you know, are helping to push that foreground or whatever the artist is looking to accomplish. But I am a little bit scared that, again, DC and or AT&T decides to bring somebody in who doesn't necessarily recognize how incredible the medium is, how incredible the industry is, and what can truly be accomplished. Now, who knows? Maybe, you know, now that AT&T has kind of been watching over DC for a decent amount of time, I'm hoping they've developed some sort of understanding and maybe they're making a positive change. But I'm not willing to kind of stamp a full-throated yell as to whether or not I'm confident in this decision until we let some time pass. You know, I'm really hoping that we can get some editorial talent into DC that can shepherd voices both from other mediums and these younger voices in comics, because I think that's something that not a lot of people are talking about. There are a lot of really young, inspired, creative people coming up in independent comics as well, who are obviously growing up as fans of these characters. So they love them and they respect them. And they also have an entirely different kind of approach to telling those stories, you know, that make it completely their own, but also respect it. I mean, you know, I think Donny Cates is a great example. He's really, really pushing the needle, but you can tell that he loves and knows these characters and he pays them a lot of respect. And I think that generally comic books need that type of energy. And again, editorial, I think, is something that both of the large publishing houses are lacking due to a number of different things. And who knows, it could be nepotism. It could be, you know, just just an inability for the corporate overlords to recognize what makes a good kind of a guardian of comics, right? Because that's essentially what an editor is. You know, the appropriate person to take on the role. So it's going to be a huge shakeup, and I'm not really willing to be a doomsday naysayer, and I'm also not willing to, you know, put on my party hat and dance around in my birthday suit. So I think that there's a lot of potential for great things. There's a very, very good chance that we move in a great direction, but there's just as much of a chance that maybe we're not moving in a direction that has the industry and the fans in mind.
Well, I think it's important to note, too, that just like Bleeding Cool, I'll throw out some other names here that I wasn't familiar with, but other people in DC editorial, Pat McCollum, Alex Anton, Molly Mahan, Rob Levin, and others, they've departed DC editorial in the last couple of months, my understanding. And, of course, as co-publisher, Dan Didio with Jim Lee, they're higher up in the hierarchy. They control all the editors below them. And they ultimately will have a lot of influence and call the shots. And obviously, if you've got that many editors leaving you, higher up editors leaving the company in the last few months, I'd be curious to know, did Dan and Jim Lee let them go? And if so, is Jim Lee on the chopping block, or maybe he's going to be moved to a different position? I find it very curious that Jim Lee's still around. Jim Lee's the guy that never gets work done on time, and then he's not much of a public face, really. He shows up every now and then. Dan Didio's the one that's more vocal. Dan Didio's the one that seems to be more out there at the conventions. And so I find it interesting that, Jim Lee's wearing the bulletproof vest, and Dan Didio's the one taking the bullets.
Yeah, it's interesting because I mentioned when Jeff John stepped down, you know, Jim Lee is the one that stepped in as that chief creative officer, but you never really hear him, on the co-publishers panel talking about his ideas or the initiatives that are coming. It's always like Boom said, it's always Dan Didio, who seems to be, for lack of a better term, the idea guy, right? The ideas are coming from on high. It does worry me that they've had some really talented editors leave lately. It's why I say they, beyond bringing in talent, they need to bring in some editorial talent. I think the lack of good editors in the industry is endemic of the downturn of the industry as a whole. Creative people would rather go into TV and movies these days. It's just the fact that those are more visible. There's more money there. To tonight's point about Donnie Cates, I agree. If you're bringing in these people, they need to love comics. And that's when you see successful writers like Donnie Cates and I'll point my finger at Matthew Rosenberg over at Marvel as well. These guys grew up reading comics. They love the characters. They're invested. They're writing comics. Both those guys, they are writing comics and creating stories for these characters because they want to write comics and create stories for these characters. They love these characters. They want to be involved in telling stories about these characters. And what I mean by that is they're not looking at it as a stepping stone to, I'm going to get a movie deal. I'm going to become the next Robert Kirkman. I'm going to get a TV series, whatever. For them, they have succeeded. Writing comics is the end goal. You see people come in from other industries and they're trying to use it as a stepping stone. It doesn't work. When I read a comic and I read a lot of comics and I get a lot of people who are, they reach out, hey, I want to come on your show. I want to talk about my book. I wrote this graphic novel. I wrote this miniseries, what have you. I'm trying to get it made into a TV show. It never works. It's never that good. Create something for this medium. And if it's good, people will find it and they will translate it and whatever. But when you say, it costs a lot of money to get a TV show made or a movie made, so I'm going to make it a comic instead, you can tell the quality's not there. Because they don't understand it. Comics are its own thing. And again, we're not going to solve these problems today, and this isn't a problem that's unique to DC, but I do agree. I find it interesting. Could these people have left because of higher up decisions? I mean, we know that AT&T dictated them laying off 243 people at the beginning of last year in January. That didn't have anything to do with Jim and Dan. That came from on high. So was it because Jim and Dan's hands were tied at this point with AT&T saying, hey, we're doing this 5G thing because we're creating a 5G network. And when people go and Google things, our comics are going to come up. I mean, the bottom line is we just don't know. But it's all we can do is speculate. And like Knight said, time will tell. You were going to say something, Boo?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I just wanted to, you mentioned the importance of good ideas. And, Black Label, I think, is a good idea. I think that the young adult lines have apparently been successful.
Very successful.
And for very good reason. And that was prompted by the terrible year in 2018 that they had that led to all the layoffs, because the young adult lines were being very successful. DC went from being the number two publisher of all for BookScan to number eight or nine. It was disastrous. And, there's a post here. There's a tweet by Brian Michael Bendis that has kind of irked me a bit. And I'm going to read it verbatim. He says, Dan Didio kept every promise made to me. We met each other 2 years ago during the madness of my near-death experience. He used it as a reason to make a lot of my personal dreams, big and small, come true. A lot of you specifically love the Wonder Comics imprint. That was Dan, he says. And I say that because, and this is me being cynical again, but the Wonder Comics imprint has been an abject disaster. Okay? It's a disaster. Dial H for Hero sells 77,000 issues a month. It's terrible. Wonder Twins has been a disaster as well. I think it sold 6,700 issues last month. Terrible. Young Justice has been an abject disaster. I think that's, the cynical side of me says that's Bendis sort of tacitly saying, look at these ideas. These were all Dan's ideas. They weren't my ideas, but these were Dan's ideas. And, this is me again being cynical, and I'm just speculating, but hey, that's what I like doing. And quite frankly, I think all these pieces are coming together. Quite frankly, I think Bendis here sees the writing on the wall. His Action Comics, his 35,000, probably the lowest sales of Superman in well over a decade, if you want to look at Comic-Con to confirm that. And, I don't think things are looking high for Bendis right now. Scott Snyder is the number one. He's got all the power right now. I did a YouTube video a while back on the game of DC Thrones, how each individual writer seems to have their own kingdom. Well, right now, I think the king of Westeros is Scott Snyder. And, rumor has it he was not a big fan of 5G, Scott Snyder. And lo and behold, there was a reason why in the new Comic Book Day issue coming out in April that they replaced they're no longer reprinting the Wonder Woman 5G appearance. Instead, it's a preview for Death Metal. You got to wonder, did Scott Snyder, he won the battle on that because they changed their minds. And now you got to wonder, is 5G even going to happen? And I also got to wonder if maybe Scott Snyder will change his mind and sign a DC exclusive, because he wasn't going to anymore. He was going to focus more on indies. I wonder if Scott Snyder's plans have now changed. And let's also, I think it's worth pointing out how strangely silent is Scott Snyder is not tweeting anything on social media. Scott Snyder has not said anything about what has happened. And I find that very interesting.
So he's in Hawaii on vacation with his family. And he did actually tweet out something late last night. I'll read them here verbatim.
Okay.
It says, Dan Didio is one of the most passionate people I know. Let me start over. Dan Didio is one of the most passionate people I know when comes to this medium. He loves comics with every fiber. He was also an early champion of my work. He backed me on Black Mirror when others didn't want it to happen. Then on Court of Owls, American Vampire, on and on. We had some nuclear fights over the years, sure, but above all, after over a decade working with him, all I feel is gratitude to Dan for his support and friendship. DC will be very different without him. So what I find interesting there, Scott doesn't say, I'm sad he's gone.
nuclear fights.
He doesn't. He says nuclear fights. He talks about Dan being very passionate, which I have said repeatedly. And let's be honest. If you're right, Boom, about this being the straw that broke the camel's back, as far as Snyder versus Didio, Scott Snyder can afford to be gracious. And I know Scott. Scott's a nice guy. Scott would never say a bad word in public about anybody, despite what his feelings might be. In private, it might be, you know, a different story. We know that Scott Snyder wanted to distance himself from 5G. We know that he didn't want his heavy metal, death metal. He didn't want that to be anywhere near this 5G stuff. So do I think DC is going to cancel 5G? I don't think they can. I think it's too late down the road. They've had, we know that they're publishing a lot fewer comics. It's because they've got a lot of their talent pool already working on that, that 5G stuff, because give them credit for knowing that late comics ruin momentum, and they wanted to get out in front of it, get some stuff in the can, build themselves a buffer. So a lot of that 5G stuff's already being worked on. Does that mean they can't pivot? Does that mean they can't say, okay, you didn't want anything to do with 5G, Scott, but actually we're still going to call it 5G, but it's going to be completely what you want it to be. Change it, fix it, massage it, do whatever you think you can do to bring it back. I personally wasn't excited about 5G. I wasn't excited to have all these new generation of characters replace the characters that I grew up reading about and love arbitrarily. It's fine to have it, the replacements happen organically. We know eventually it's always going to be Bruce Wayne under the cowl. It's always going to be Diana Prince. It's always going to be Hal Jordan. It's going to be Clark Kent. That's just the way that it is. You may have taken them off the table for a little while, but you risk alienating fans when you do it all at once. Did you not learn that lesson, DC, with the New 52 when you got rid of those old relationships? So I wasn't excited about 5G. And now I think it could change. I don't think it cannot happen. It's still going to be called 5G. I think that's an AT&T, mandate. Again, has to do with business and search engines and all that kind of stuff. And they want 5G to be synonymous with DC Comics to some extent, which is fine. I don't have a problem with that, as long as the stories are good. And I think that when you look at Scott Snyder's track record versus Dan Didio's track record, just as writers, Scott Snyder's been wildly more successful. The numbers are there for his series. I'm not saying that Dan didn't write some good stuff. I loved Sideways. I thought that was great. I'm enjoying his Metal Men series he's doing right now with Shane Davis. But he's not nowhere near on the level of Scott Snyder, let's be honest. I love Dan as a person, but Snyder clearly wins that battle. So I'd be much more comfortable letting Scott Snyder turn 5G into something else, or Jeff Johns turn it into something else. I'd be pretty skeptical about Bendis being able to do anything with it. I'm kind of on board with what Boom was saying there. I won't go as far as to say Wonder Comics has been a complete disaster, but I just for whatever reason, and I've met Brian a few times, much like Dan, infectious love of comics. Like, you cannot meet Brian Michael Bendis, talk to him about comics and not leave with a smile on your face. It's so clear that the guy loves what he does, but I've never been that big of a fan of his work. And I think the quality of his work has diminished over the years. I'm not sure what the reason for that is. I do love, much like Dan, that he does have a lot of relationships. He has brought in some talent back to DC, Matt Fraction, Kelly Sue DeConnick, David F. Walker, Jamal Campbell. I think the Naomi title was probably the most successful of in terms of sales wise. I don't know why these Wonder Comics imprints aren't the individual comics themselves aren't resonating with people. They're okay. They're not great. Maybe it's just that. Maybe Bendis doesn't have quite the cachet. But I wouldn't be surprised if the higher ups at AT&T do look at the Bendis recruitment as a failure. They gave him a lot of money. And it clearly gave him a lot of power. at DC, and that was based on Dan's recommendation, based on the promises that Dan made to bring Bendis over. And a lot of that had to do with Bendis's previous work, you know, just like a Major League Baseball player who gets a giant free agent contract for what they did the previous 3 years. Look at somebody like Albert Pujols, right? He clearly hasn't performed for the Angels. Like he hasn't earned that contract. I don't think Bendis has earned the contract or the power that he has been given at DC. So what happens now? I think based on the success or lack of success for Bendis at DC, thank God, I don't think he's going to be the one calling the shots. I don't know that Scott would want to do it. Certainly not long term. I don't know that Jeff Johns would want to do it, although that would be a huge win in terms of fandom. You would get so many people, so many fans flocking to back to DC because Jeff Johns is beloved by them. But I think he wants to make movies and TV shows. I think that's what I think that's why Doomsday Clock was late. I think that's why Rebirth lost its momentum. Jeff was so involved with it early on as the chief creative officer and shepherding all the titles and talking to all the creatives. I did 16 interviews in one day at WonderCon, which is sort of DC Comics' home show in 2016 when they announced Rebirth and who all the creative teams were. And they, a lot of the creative teams were there, and I did 16 interviews with them, and they all mentioned almost to a man about how Jeff was shepherding them and giving them advice and kind of overseeing everything. In that way, he you could consider him the editor-in-chief of Rebirth. But then, you know, he kind of became hands-off as he got more involved with Suicide Squad movie, Wonder Woman, that kind of thing. And so was it that? Was it that the creators couldn't maintain that momentum? Was it that Jeff wasn't available anymore when he left as CCO? I don't know. I, you know, we're not privy to the details of why Rebirth failed, but I look at Rebirth as the last big success for DC, and unfortunately, the opportunity was squandered. So, where we go from here with 5G, I don't know. What do you think in terms of 5G, Dark Knight?
Well, I think it's, you know, it's obviously going to be a very tumultuous period because there are all the rumors about, you know, what they're doing with creating, for the most part, new legacy characters or bringing kind of obscure ones up to the forefront. That scares me, and I've talked about it on numerous occasions as to how I think that that is a complete, complete misshot to give the opportunities to characters who we've already developed, at least to a degree, who kind of deserve a shot at uptaking the mantles. I mean, you know, obviously just looking at, and not speaking in terms of the DC, you know, timeline, but just, you know, the legacy, for example, a majority of the second generation characters, you know, the like Dick Grayson's generation, a majority of them have not truly gotten a chance to reinterpret what their kind of parent mantle is under their own context and try to measure up to that. Obviously, we've gotten some time with Dick as Batman. We've gotten some time with Wally as Flash, but we haven't gotten time for a lot of those other characters to pick that up. And I think that, you know, skipping them, skipping the next generation with the Cassie Sands mark and the Connor Kent and the Tim Drake, and skipping all of those multiple generations, I think is a total oversight, because I think a lot of those characters would be at least an interesting dynamic to explore, and there would be at least a rationale behind it, because these characters have been here and have served a role under that mantle for so long. And you bring up a very good point, and you've said it multiple times during this conversation, is that the thing is that change can happen, but it has to be organic. And the issue is, no matter what DC does, it doesn't matter if they don't do it organically. It can't happen overnight. But I think that if you do want to kind of take the spotlight and give our, you know, fan favorite primary generation a rest, the Clark Kents, Bruce Waynes, and Diana Princes, I think that, you know, your next best bet is to approach one of the generations between then and whatever the hell, you know, the rumor mill is spouting out. So, I don't really know what's going to happen now. With 5G kind of being the big summer event and us already being to the middle end of February, I can't help but think they've already charted themselves along fairly far. I mean, it's also not like DC isn't, and the comic publishers in general aren't known for making very split, you know, on their heel decisions. But I can't help but think that whatever changes are going to happen are going to be anywhere from minute to moderate at best. So I'm interested to see what's going on, but I think it's a huge oversight. You know, I want more than anything for DC to make me eat my words and for me to totally enjoy whatever they do and for them to generate great stories that do services to the characters, the universe, the legacy. But I just can't help but be skeptical, obviously, based on DC's current trajectory and the idea of it. Because again, I think that if you want to take that spotlight away, we've proven that we can make a Dick Grayson Batman work. We've proven that we can make a Wally West Flash work. Why not take that generation into the spotlight as a whole? Because we haven't seen Dick Grayson as Batman or Wally West as Flash, for example, interacting with their peers, having all stepped up to that platform. And I think it would, A, create a huge dynamic. Obviously, you're going to upset people because somebody's always going to be crying in their mother's basement. But I think that there's a little bit more of a predicated history and a rationale to make that type of move. And personally, I would be more than happy with it because even as a complete Bruce Wayne stan, I know that I'm going to get him back eventually. And I would like to hear some fresh voices and get fresh takes on the DC universe because, quite frankly, you know, I am getting, even in my kind of young career as a comic book reader, tired of the same thing over and over again, you know, maybe wearing a different hat. So, you know, where are we going from here? I'm not too sure. But all I can hope is that whatever changes DC are going to make are based on story, not based on spectacle, not based on temporary sales, because if you create good story, the sales will come. And it's been proven time and time again. You look at books like Neil Gaiman's Sandman. Obviously, when it started, it was not a bestseller. By the time Sandman got to its end, it was outselling all of DC's major titles. It was an obscure character in a realm that Neil Gaiman completely reworked. Why did it work? Because it was a slow burn. They put somebody into that position that cares, that has a penchant for storytelling and world building, and it worked. You know, if when I started comics, when I started reading comics, if you had told me that Neil Gaiman's Sandman outsold Batman and Superman, I would have told you were crazy. After having read it and experienced it, I understand. Because ultimately, while it might not see a lot of shorthand, you know, and very immediate response in terms of sales, you will build a foundation. And not only will you build a foundation, you might be able to bring readers who would otherwise not come into the industry because, frankly, let's be real, it's not a very welcoming industry, especially with Big Two Comics. So, you know, I can only hope that whatever happens is going to be moving towards a direction that pays homage to what's come before and has a desire to innovate and push those characters and these worlds to new places. So, well, you know, I guess I'm sitting very in the middle of the road, but here I am.
I would, just building on that, Dark Knight, is that this is changing in real time. I mean, this weekend in Burbank, they have some decisions to make. The final order cutoff for Free Comic Book Day, the Generation Zero Gods Among Us story for Free Comic Book Day, the final order cutoff for ordering that is this Monday. It's the day after tomorrow. And they have to decide whether or not are they gonna put that death metal preview story in there, or are they gonna go back to Wonder Woman 5G? They got to decide if they're even going to do 5G. I mean, this is a major, major decision that they have to make. And it's now, according to people, from all I can tell, 5G is still advertised, obviously, as formally launching in October. But in what shape or form, I guess we're going to have to wait and see. But I think we're going to be having a lot of changes between now and then. And it's going to be really interesting to see how all this falls out.
Yeah, let me ask you, Boom, because we have very similar backgrounds. You know, I started collecting comics when I was six, and a lifelong fan, been reading them. There's something to be said for, you know, to borrow a word from Dark Knight, spectacle, right? It reminds me of another word we use in comics, and that's speculator or speculation. And so, yeah. Regardless of whether 5G in its original incarnation was going to be well received or not, it was going to be covered. It was going to be an event. It was going to be a spectacle. You would see it in mainstream media coverage. Hey, look, Superman, Batman, Aquaman, Green Lantern, Wonder Woman, they've all been replaced by these unknown characters because, again, like to Dark Knight's point, it's not Dick Grayson. It's not Wally West. It's not Cassie Sandsmark. It's Luke Fox. It's whoever the Green Lantern is from Far Sector. It's we weren't even sure who the Wonder Woman replacement was yet. The Flash replacement is Captain Boomerang's illegitimate son. These unknown characters, right? And so that's going to – DC had to know, AT&T had to know that at some extent you are alienating some of your fans. Some of your fans are going to react with vitriol on the internet, but – going back to that old adage, is there's no such thing as bad press. At least people are talking about it. At least people are paying attention. At least it's getting coverage in the news. You are creating a spectacle, just like the New 52 was. And I think DC, to some extent, was hoping, well, that's going to – we're going to have a repeat of the success of New 52 in that it's going to be a jumping on point for people who've never read comics because they know they – probably don't have to pay attention to what came before because these are brand new characters that haven't really been around for very long. So in terms of a speculator market, in terms of building buzz, building press, whether it be good or bad, it would have had eyes on it. So in terms of looking at it from a speculator standpoint, Boom, what are your thoughts there?
Well, the speculator market, quite frankly, if I have one criticism of the speculation market, is that it often doesn't focus on stories. It focuses on key appearances, right. First appearances.
Yep.
It doesn't even care about first issues anymore. You know, it's getting more and more insane, to be quite blunt. I actually think that the growth of the speculator market, and I'm going to say something that might sound a little bit controversial, but I do think that in many ways the spec market has sort of maybe save the industry a little bit. It gives it more attention. At the same time, it's approaching absurdity levels, I think, in terms of what the spec level is. I mean, just this, the sheer nonsense of how does Batman 89 being sold for $20 by your average comic book retailer, how does that promote comic books to your average person? That's appalling. Now, I know that's a marketing screw up in the decision. They underpublished, it was underordered, et cetera, but again, just sheer nonsense. But I don't want to digress too much. You asked about speculation in regard to this particular context. The speculation with respect to there's a lot of spectacle here, and Dark Knight made repeatedly the same point that spectacle over story has been part of DC's problem, and there's a lot of spectacle here with the DC generation. I mean, don't get me wrong. There's a lot of potential for good stories here. I mean, even the names. I mean, these are catchy, spectacular names. The Spectacle, Generation 1, Age of Mysteries, Generation 2, Age of the Metahuman, Age the Third, Age of Crisis, Age of Rebirth, Age of Tomorrow. These are all, they sound cool. They sound awesome. Okay. And as a collector, as a lifelong collector, I'm going to eat that stuff up. I'll collect it. Is this an organic development? Are these characters going to be proceeding organically? I mean, these are all, by the way, those were all generation 1, 2, through 5. Those are all 48 page one shots. I mean, what the hell can they put in 48 pages that's going to wow me? What type of organic evolution of new characters are we going to get in a 48 page special? At best, you're going to whet the appetite. And again, I'm not trying to be a negative Nelly here. And maybe I am, whatever. I'm in the mood, whatever. But I'm just saying that it seems to me that there's been nothing organic about approaching 5G at all. Nothing organic. The fact that Snyder and Didier are having their war of ideas, and Snyder doesn't even want his metal to be part, didn't even want to be anywhere near 5G, that tells you something that, there's too many chefs in the kitchen, man. Too many chefs in the kitchen. And I'll stop talking now.
Yeah, it's interesting. They tried to spin the New Age of Heroes out of the Dark Knight metal, and Scott managed to get that sort of nixed, and it was only tangentially related. But then it seems like Didio, whether, you know, I don't even know that 5G was him. It's interesting because so many people are saying, yeah, not liking this idea, and they're blaming it on Didio, when we know Didio doesn't really like legacy characters, or that's long been rumored. Why would he be pushing, you know, new legacy characters? It just doesn't make sense. But
and the irony is that he got fired for pushing legacy characters, because 5G is all about legacy. That's
right,
the irony
exactly,
here.
Exactly. But was that even his idea? Was it AT&T? I mean, again, we're not really going to know. To me, it's like, I wouldn't mind, because I understand you do want to introduce new characters. I wouldn't mind if they, and I like the idea of, hey, everything counts, because that's certainly the sort of the tagline of where DC is right now. They are at least giving lip service to the idea that they learned their lesson with the mistakes they made with the New 52 and eliminating story. When I saw Dan most recently at Long Beach Comic Expo, we had a long talk about how, yeah, everything's going to count. We'll get it into the continuity one way or the other. Maybe it's messy. Maybe it doesn't always make sense. But continuity is going to be second to just telling good stories, which, you know, again, maybe it's just lip service. But I did like the idea that we were going to have these five different generations, or at least the first four generations, and all the stories that we read mattered and counted. And you felt like if you read something, you didn't feel like it was dismissed later on. It happened in some way, in some aspect of the DC multiverse. And so what you read did matter. You didn't feel like you had wasted your time. And again, not to, you know, use this word again over and over and over, but the fact that all these new characters were coming at the same time and it wasn't happening organically, that's where I was having the kind of the disconnect. That's where it felt like it wasn't quite going to work. So if whoever takes the helm of 5G, if they can turn it into, hey, this fifth generation is, you know, one possible future for the DC universe, make it an anthology, I think, you know, along the lines of these 100-page giants, where we do see these new versions of, you know, Flash, Batman, Wonder Woman, what have you, with these rumored replacement characters that none of us really know much about yet. I would be okay with that, as long as the main line continues to be the characters that we've known and loved for a long time. And if you do want to make a change, you do want to bring Wally West back to headline Flash, I'm okay with that. If you want to bring in a different Green Lantern, a different Batman for a short period of time, again, I'm okay with that. But not some mandated, you know, starting point where they're all replaced at the same time. To me, it just doesn't work. It's fake, it's forced, and I don't like it. But so that would be my idea of how you could still move forward with 5G, still use the material that's been created, but not alienate fans. Would it work? Would it create enough of a spectacle to draw the publicity they're after? I don't know. Maybe not. But to me, that I would be okay with that. Beyond that, if they continue with 5G, then all I can hope is that it doesn't last too long. So I don't know. How would you fix 5G, or what would you hope, best case scenario for 5G, Dark Knight?
Well, you know, for me, obviously, I think that there are a couple different approaches with dealing with a potential future of the DC universe. Primarily, and I brought it up briefly on my stream with Boom last night, is that I think that, you know, it was a huge missed opportunity, and I guess maybe it was a positive thing, because I am not fond of Bendis's trajectory with DC and his outlook on the DC universe. 5G very well could have been the Legion of Superheroes. That could have been how you brought them back. Obviously under a more competent captain to steer that ship. But I think that if you wanted to make that transition, you know, there's a cult following to the Legion of Superheroes, and I think that they ultimately, even for me as somebody who has very little exposure to them, they do represent a foundation of the DC universe, and it provides a lot of potential for future storytelling, where again you could tell those future stories, but they are so far removed that we can still have our, you know, present day Bruce Wayne Batman, Clark Kent Superman, you know? And I think ideally that would have been the way to go. You know, I've brought it up on, you know, already and on multiple streams, that I think that there are numerous generations in between what we have now and in between, you know, what is being proposed by the rumor mill that we could approach. You know, even if you want to go a little bit further down into the time stream, I don't understand why you want to have a world where John Kent is Superman and Damian Wayne is in Batman. That just doesn't make sense. If you want to go that Super Sons route and play, you know, an almost more direct lineage line to the legacy of the DC universe, fine. But let's be a little bit more consistent across the map here. And ultimately, I think that DC could do almost anything as long as it was influenced by story and if it had the right people behind it. Because we've seen a lot of those who will now refer to as the best in the industry do things that upon kind of first glance or upon first mention, we might have totally rejected, but they made it work entirely. You know, I wasn't reading comics when they made Dick Grayson Batman during the Morrison run, but I can't imagine that there weren't a lot of people that were very upset over it. And guess what? It worked. And I'm saying that as a diehard Bruce Wayne fan. So what can I hope for the future? I'll bring it back to our conversation in editorial. It rounds back to hiring, you know, competent folks who love DC Comics and who love what it stands for and want to make sure that it survives rather than somebody who's just there to perform a job. I think that's one big issue, is that the comic book industry makes it very, very difficult for people who are passionate about it to access those positions of power. It's not a very transparent industry when it comes to knowing what's going on behind the scenes and what exactly, you know, people want to learn in order to be effective. You really get thrown into the shark tank. And even from my experience, man, trying to break in, working, you know, as an assistant for editorial, and I've applied to both DC and Marvel, and I've had, you know, very different experiences with both. And I can say that a lot of the time it you very much feel like you're left in the dark. So I think that ultimately whatever happens, there needs to be an atmosphere that is fostered by these publishers that values the industry more than just being an intellectual property. And, you know, ultimately with, you know, the advent of these massive companies taking over these publishers that we love, it scares me a little bit, but you never know. You know, you do have guys, for example, up at Disney, like Kevin Feige, who are clear fans of the Marvel universe and, you know, can satisfy that corporate need to make money, but also tell great stories. So I don't think it's impossible. I have hope for it, but whatever happens moving forward, we need to take that approach with care. And unfortunately, I'm a little bit scared because I haven't seen DC make that type of stride.
Yeah, I think Scott Snyder would be the best choice, the more I think about it as we talk. But again, I just don't think he'd want to do it. But he does have a reputation for being a great teacher and a great, you know, he gets the best out of people that he mentors.
I mean, I'll say this. Scott Snyder is one of my favorite writers in comics. And I say this with ample respect. I mean, I have a tattoo from, you know, one of his original creations on my body, and it's permanent, and I'm proud of it. And I have a lot of respect for the man. But there's no way I would ever want him in an editorial position. Absolutely not. Because, you know, through my own, I guess, even very basic research, there is a very different skill set to being a writer and to being an editor. And sometimes those things, you know, they intersect. Sometimes you have folks who can accomplish those jobs. But being in an editorial position doesn't necessarily mean that you have big ideas. Scott Snyder is ambitious. And he's proven that with Metal, and he's proven that with his Justice League. But his level to execute and to wrap that up and consolidate it into a functional story that kind of has its boundaries has been totally ineffective. So for me, an editor and somebody in that type of editorial power, because again, we've talked about how DC's publisher role does have a very, very, firm grasp on whatever's going on editorially. They need to have something beyond just being a competent idea man or a competent writer. And again, Scott Snyder has proven himself and has written some of my favorite stories of all time. And he is, you know, a big part as to why, you know, I'm here talking to you guys and why I love comic books. But with all due respect, I don't think that he has that control anymore. And who's to say he ever did? You know, I don't think Scott Snyder has written a I don't want to say bulletproof, but a solid story with I mean, I don't necessarily know how I want to word it. He hasn't written, I guess, an evergreen story from start to finish in probably more than half a decade. And I'd stand on that hill and I'd die on that hill. And I love the guy. So I think that when we're approaching trying to restaff, you know, that publisher's position or put somebody in that editorial authority, they do need to have a very particular skill set. And it's one that I don't think Snyder has quite proven. And especially with his trajectory as of late, he seems to kind of be taking an approach. Well, I've made my mark. I can tell the stories that I want to tell. And I'm sure that has played, you know, a number of beneficial roles to his mental health, because I know he struggled with depression for a long time. But as a fan, I can tell that he's not hungry. He's not, he doesn't have any of that paranoia left to kind of, dot his I's. And it kind of shows. And you know, ultimately, I'm glad the guy feels like he's in a better place, and I value that more than stories, because obviously that's a man's health. But I don't think that drive is there anymore. I don't think that he has the skill set that we would need to not only have a solid publisher, but somebody who can take this kind of negative start we're at. You know, we're starting behind the line here, and propel it upwards, because that is a Herculean task in and of itself, right? It's not like we're starting at ground zero. We're starting below it.
Yeah, it's a good point. I don't know that I don't know that I agree with you. I think Scott could do it. I don't think he would want to. And I wouldn't think that and I don't think he would be a long-term answer. He couldn't do it for 20 years the way Didio did. You know, he would come in and he would lay the groundwork and then, you know, make sure things were heading in the right direction, and then he would pull back. I can't imagine him, and I don't know that I'd want him to try to do it long term, because I think you're right. His skill set is better suited for other roles in the industry. So, I'm curious. What about Bendis as the publisher? Boom. What do you think about that? You know, he get him away from writing. From ruining Superman and ruining Jonathan Kent.
So he can ruin the rest of the DC universe.
Yeah. I just think ideologically, I don't think it would be a good fit. I don't think it's a good idea. And I really don't think, good Lord, I just can't, if they're using their brains and connecting the dots, I can't imagine that they would hire him. And I think that would be a nightmare scenario. I don't think, I'm trying to be optimistic. But you know what? I mean, editorial, being a publisher and editor is different than being a writer. Bendis is very passionate. He's good. He's good at promotions. He's good at selling his stories. And he's good at selling other people's stories. He's just lately, in my opinion, not particularly good at writing stories. And, you know, so it's one of those things, but he does have the passion for it. I just think it's not, you know, honestly, I think I'm so frustrated because, I know that there are tens of thousands of guys like me and the two guys I'm talking to right now that we know the sense that we want to get out of comic books. And if I could say something to the AT&T corporate executives, who maybe are really envision something different, I would remind them that it's the source material that has given rise to the most successful movies in box office history. It's the source material of comic books, and it's DC. DC is different than Marvel. There's very different tonalities, and DC should be embracing that. I think it's even the DC movies that are capable of making $1 billion are very different from tonality than the Marvel movies, and they can still win make $1 billion. And I don't think that Bendis gets that. Bendis is too much of a Marvel writer. He's too decompressed. He doesn't know how to structure stories well. He's not, he doesn't have it. You know, I mean, if he wants to be somebody who goes to recruit talent, to find talent, actually, I don't even know if I'd want him to do that. I think he's just someone whose time has passed. I mean, let him go and write, let him do his own. If he's so bloody good, why doesn't he go into the indie market? Oh, wait, he does have a bunch of indie titles. And no matter what DC does, they can't sell them. You know what's funny? I think Pearl has been advertised more times than the issue's actually been bought by retailers. It's unbelievable. And I don't mean to be harsh, but, you know, enough is enough already. I mean, you know, I mean, usually when a horse is, I mean, we still live in a day and age when you injure a horse, you shoot it. I mean that metaphorically, but like enough. Like it's just, you know, man, I need a drink, but it's only noon.
So who would you?
I mean, I think. Oh, sorry. I don't want to interrupt you there.
No, I was just gonna ask Boom, who would you choose to lead?
Honestly,
DC?
I would absolutely court Geoff Johns. I really, really would. And if he wouldn't, I would ask Geoff Johns' opinion. And you know, I'll be very blunt. The short answer is that I don't know. I really don't know. I would actually, you know what? I would talk to Jimmy Palmiotti. I would talk to Jimmy Palmiotti. I think that's one guy who, he was great, great friends with Joe Quesada. Back in the day, they put Marvel Knights on the map. All of a sudden, Joe Quesada. I mean, I laughed when Joe Quesada was made an editor-in-chief of Marvel. I thought, are you kidding? But boy, oh boy, was that a successful move for Marvel. I think Jimmy Palmiotti would be fantastic. He's a mover and shaker. I think if you're going to pick a wild card, go with Jimmy Palmiotti. The guy, everybody likes him. He knows the talent. And he knows DC. And I'd finally get Joe Hex. You know what? I just thought of that now. I'm going to go with Jimmy Palmiotti.
Yeah, I thought about Jimmy myself. I just don't know that where he's at in his life right now that he'd want to take on that much work. But I think he could do a great job. Yeah. What about you, Dark Knight? Who's your choice?
Well, it's certainly not Bendis. I'll tell you that. I think that Geoff Johns is the only logical play. And I know he probably doesn't want to be a part of it. I mean, listen, Geoff Johns came up early in his career being an assistant to director Dick Donner. And it's very clear that being a part of film and television is something that he wants to do. But God damn it, if a truckload of money has anything to say about it, you know, if it were my choice, I would drop it right on his front doorstep. Because it's very clear that this man knows continuity, he loves the characters, and he's proven that he can reshape the universe to accommodate those things. So, you know, I would essentially give my left nut to get Geoff Johns in there as publisher, even if it were for a relatively short term of time, just to rewrite the ship and then have him handpick whoever comes next. I think that's very important. You know, and I know we were talking about Bendis and his role. I think Boom said it perfectly. I think he's past his prime. You know, he's proven himself, and I was, you know, one of the most optimistic people when Bendis was coming to DC. I was like, this is going to be a fresh playground for him. Obviously I was wrong. And I'm very outspoken in saying that because I am absolutely, repulsed by almost everything he's done at DC, and I've lost a lot of my respect for the guy as a storyteller, not as a human, because I think he seems like a really great guy. But whoever we put in there not only needs to love the industry, because it shows that guys like Bendis and even like Jimmy Palmiotti love the industry, but there needs to be a particular level of competency and proven track record in that more editorial, that more advisory role. And Geoff Johns is the guy to do it. And Geoff Johns, it's funny because you could literally ask me anything about comics and my default answer is probably going to be Geoff Johns. You could ask me who I think could go and write the ship wherever in comics, it's going to be Geoff Johns. And I think that's a testament to just how capable and how much agency he has to affecting great change in the industry, and he's proven it. I mean, god damn, he made the Green Lantern one of the highest selling comic books of its time. The Green Lantern. You know what I mean? And prior to that, aside from when Hal Jordan was first introduced, he wasn't. It wasn't a high-selling character. It wasn't a popular mythology, and he practically crafted his own space odyssey within a universe that feels just as vast. So, I think that is obviously, and his advisory role during DC Rebirth is a testament to his ability. And you know, he would absolutely, bar none, be my first pick.
Yeah, I just don't know that he would, you know, want to do it. Now, obviously, that wasn't a caveat to the question I asked. I'm not sure who the answer is. I think Jimmy would do a good job. Again, much like Geoff Johns, I don't think he'd want to do it for different reasons. I just think Jimmy's not at a point. He's not at a point in his life where he doesn't want to probably take on that much work. What I do hope is that it is somebody from the comic industry. It is a comic person. AT&T's already put Pamela Lyford, who was formerly the head of consumer products at Warner Brothers, a business person with no experience in the comic industry at all. She's now in charge of DC Comics. I worry about that and some of the decisions that she's made already regarding Black Label and censoring stories and clamping down on creators. That's not how you get the best content. That's not how you get the next Watchmen, by dictating to creators what their content should look like. So that would be a worst case scenario for me, is if they pick some you know, corporate yes man who doesn't know anything about comics. But I don't know. I agree with you both. I don't think Bendis is the answer. Much like Dark Knight said, I think he's kind of past his prime if he ever had one. For my taste, he was always too decompressed in his storytelling. And again, I like Brian personally, as I said earlier, every time I've met him, he's been an amazing person to talk to and loves comics. But I just, you know, his storytelling style, his ideas just aren't where it's at for me. And the fact he's on my favorite character. And again, if you listen to our Superman Sundays, you'll know how I feel about him and what he's done to the relationship of Clark and Lois. And now he's revealed the secret identity. Hey, we did this. You know, we did this. You ruined Jonathan Kent. Now you ruined the relationship of Lois and Clark. And now you want to ruin the character altogether? I just don't get it. I think something needs to be done there. So it's definitely not Bendis. I don't think Geoff Johns would do it. I don't think Jimmy would do it. I don't think Scott would do it. So I don't know. I'm in the same boat with Comic Boom. I don't know who a good person would be. But I think you need to look at sort of restructuring things at DC. Take this advantage of the way things have been going and the decisions that have been made. Leave Jim Lee as publisher. I'm totally fine with that. But Jim Lee should and probably is a publisher more in the line of the way the publisher and what that title and role means over at Marvel. You know, you're dealing with the logistics, you're dealing with the printers and licensing and things like that. It's more of a business person role. But what Jim Lee does, so, you know, Jim Lee is an extremely intelligent individual. He has a degree in psychology, was going to go to med school before he detoured into comics. And he understands. He created Wildstorm and was able to sell that to DC. He has a very good business sense. He knows how to foster talent. I think he's well suited for a publisher role, but not a publisher role the way that Dan had it, right? I think we've made it pretty clear here that we all think Dan was much more of an editor-in-chief kind of person, much more on the creative side. So leave Jim Lee where he is as publisher. Get somebody else to be the chief creative officer, or just eliminate that position and roll it into whoever your new editor-in-chief is. It's not Bob Harris, who has that title currently at DC, but is more dealing with logistics and really much more of a traditional publisher role. Get somebody in there who's going to foster the talent, who's going to have a vision that's consistent, like Boom was talking about earlier. Stop, you know, throwing things at the wall every 6 months to see what sticks. Stop with the next big event and to try to bring in new readers. Bring back the charm, the tone, the aesthetic that we all grew up loving about DC Comics. And if you have to bring in somebody old school to kind of get that working, maybe like a Marv Wolfman or a Jerry Conway, then you do that with the eye toward finding somebody who whether it's one of your executive editors or senior editors there, you know, like a Mark Doyle or a Jamie Rich, see who steps up over the next year or two and can take that role. I think that might be the best way to go about it. See what cream rises to the top. But it's interesting times. I'm worried for my favorite comic publisher, what this might bode for the future. But I guess time will tell. So any last thoughts? I want to thank you guys for joining me, but I'll give you a chance to respond to what I just said or anything else that you want to say. We'll start with you, Boom.
Well, I just I'm going to choose to be optimistic. I do think, because quite frankly, I gone out of my way to try to. I even have I did a lot of work on even prepping for a big 5G video that I was going to put together. I do think 5G has some interesting ideas, and you know, on the surface, it sounds interesting. And look, it all comes down to the writing. Let's be blunt here. Good stories matter, and the problem is, and you know, it's Occam's razor. You know, how you solve a problem. The solution is always the simplest answer. Just write good stories, and we haven't been getting good stories. And because I don't think the writers are really understand the source material themselves enough. I don't think they're inspired enough. And frankly, the stories just aren't very good. And they go on forever. And that's a problem. That's a problem. And, you know, I've always said this growing up, collecting comics as long as I have, and I'm sure you'd agree with me, these things are cyclical. I remember in 2017, Marvel had a disastrous year. A disastrous year. They had editorial problems. They had every single month in 2017, Marvel had a PR disaster. And look at Marvel now. I mean, things can change in a heartbeat. You know, wait a few months, things can change. It used to be that I could say, if I didn't like a creative team on a title, that I could just wait 3 or 4 months. Now I got to wait 3 years. Like, what's going on? Like, this is something, even if you have a good writer on a title, do you really need to leave them on for 3 years? These are the questions that I have, because I don't think you need to do that. You can move them around, and you can, I don't think that you're fostering a good work environment if you're just trying to basically, trying to suck and blow at the same time, if you get my drift. You know, I mean, creatives need to be, not necessarily controlled, but they need to be handled. To me, a very good writer is somebody that you should, it's like a weapon, but you got to point, but you control where you point that weapon and when to use it. You know, you don't necessarily have to interfere with it, but you do have, but you're the one that steer handles it. And that's what DC needs to do. And I just don't like, I like you say, I share your trepidation, but I'll choose optimism.
What about you? Last thoughts, Dark Knight?
I've gone on record and speaking with Boom in the past and saying that, you know, I still think that there are a place for these long, intricate runs, if put in the right hands, obviously. You know, without Geoff Johns to foster what he did for the Green Lanterns, that entire realm of comics would be all the poorer for it. So I think that there is a place for it under the right hands, and obviously under a strong editorial staff, which is what they had back on those titles in 2005 when that began. So I think that there are obviously mitigating circumstances to everything. I am admittedly scared as to what's going to be happening next, just kind of being in this state of flux and having very little information as to, you know, what the direction is going to be. And what the motive behind getting rid of DiDio was it because he was playing, you know, interference on the progression and the growth of the company? Or was this a corporate play to try to kind of create this off-kilter standardization of what they think comics should be? I don't know. And it makes me a little bit paranoid. However, all I can do is hope that whatever decisions they're making behind the scenes are at the benefit of the characters, the universes, and the fans. And also, if we're going to twist my leg because nobody knows who's going to do what, I'll suck it up and take the job. I'm here for it. Can't promise I'll be good, but I'm here for it. you know, in all seriousness, I think whoever goes in there, and we've beat the dead horse with this, they need to be passionate. They need to know the industry, and they need to love the industry. But aside from that, they need to have the agency to be able to follow through on those ideas. And whatever happens next, you know, I just hope that it's driven by the right motivations. And I quite frankly hope DC makes me eat my words of paranoia, and I hope that I love whatever happens, because frankly, I haven't loved DC Comics as an entity for about 2 years now, and it scares me.
All right, fair enough. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm going to put links to both the YouTube channels for both my guests today in the show notes. So if you want to hear more of them and their opinions on comics, be sure and check out the show notes and give them a follow on YouTube. And hopefully we're going to have them back on in the future to do some more collaboration. So thanks again, guys. It's been a really fun and interesting talk. And I guess we're all in the same boat. We'll see what the future holds for DC Comics.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us, Jason.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.